Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
Where are all the gutless American wrestlers? Step in the ring with the Baron and face the brains.
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine is in government issue.
Hello, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining us for another fun episode. This episode, we have former promoter Joel Goodhart on the show. Me and Joel talk about the TWA, ECW, Todd Gordon, Buddy Rogers, and much, much more. That interview is coming up soon. So how's everybody been? Huh? We've had some really great episodes. I hope you're enjoying those. And if you have, make sure you give us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. While you're there, make sure you subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes, because we got lots of great interviews coming up in the future. So let's just get to it. What do you say? I'm not one for the, if you noticed, I'm not one for the introductions and the closing and everything, right? I don't talk about the modern wrestling product. I don't want to be that guy that gets on here and rants about what I really feel about it, because, you know, it's not worth my time. I like to get on here and get in and let's get to the interview, right? That's the meat of my show. That's where, my bread is buttered. I just feel like that's where my skills are, is in that conversation that I have with whoever it is on the show. So let's do that, right? Let's just get it by. Let's get to the break. And when we come back, we'll have my interview with Joel Goodhart. So stick around.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by Joel Goodhart. Joel, how are you?
Man, how are you? For some reason, my video isn't on. I don't know why. I'm going to put it on. There we go.
There you are.
There you go. I'm doing fine.
There I am. Hey, all right. Let's dive into it. You grew up in Philadelphia, correct?
That's where I was born and raised.
Yeah, and in the mid-80s, you had a wrestling store. So how did that come about? How do you come to have a wrestling store?
Well, that's an hour into itself.
Oh, give us the gist.
Okay, long story long. I was introduced to a third party to a couple by the name of Carmel and Paul Panfil. Okay. And anyway, one thing led to the other. And Paul says to me one time, by the way, if you ever need tickets to sporting events, shows, whatever, I hawk them on the side. Just keep me in mind. I said, I'll take care of that. About a week or two later, Paul calls me up and says, what are you doing Saturday night? And I said, nothing in particular. Why? He says, well, I'm going to the wrestling show. You want to go? Man, I haven't been to a wrestling card in years. I used to go with my father when I was a kid. So Paul and I went to the wrestling show. It was the NWA. They were coming into Philadelphia at the time. And he had front row seats. I don't know how he pulls it off, but he had front row seats. And I don't know if you've ever been front row when you see the Road Warriors against the Midnight Express. These guys were big. They were huge. One thing leads to the other. And we went back to the wrestling matches 2 or 3 months in a row. Then I'm kind of snoopy. I kind of look around and there's a guy walking around the ring in a suit. And I figure, what the hell? I got to say to him, excuse me. You look important. Can I ask who you are? And he said, yeah, his name was Elliot Murnick. And he was Crockett's people in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Well, I said, well, then I got to get to know who you are. Anyway, one thing leads to the other. He says to me, are you doing anything after the show? I said, no. He said, well, why don't you come back to the Marriott? That's where everybody used to go. Okay. So I go to the Marriott. I hook up with him. One thing leads to the other. I get involved in the sport. That's another story into itself. But one day I'm at Carmel and Paul's house, and we're sitting around the table thinking, what can we do? And don't ask me who comes up with it because I can't remember who did. I don't know if it was me or Carmel or Paul. Why don't we open up a wrestling store? Well, this was when Hulk Hogan was starting to get big, and there was a lot of crap coming out with Hulk Hogan. Anyway, one thing leads to the other. We open up a store. We call it the Squared Circle. It was open only on the weekends because I had a full-time career. Carmella was a full-time mom. Paul had a full-time career. So we were open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And Carmella had been connected in the business for years. And she knew Bruno Sammartino and Dominic DiNucci. So we wound up having Bruno and Dominic at our grand opening for autographs and pictures and whatever. And one thing led to the other. And all of a sudden, we had a wrestling store. And we had 30, 40, or 50 people at the store all the time watching the TV on the outside. You didn't have high-def TV. This was just a regular black and white or color television. Okay? And they would sit there, and we'd get tapes from Memphis and Japan. And Midwest, and you name them. And except for the crap people were watching on TV, which was the WWF or whatever it was at the time, we started having people come, and one thing led to the other, and that's how we got to the store.
Well, and you mentioned Dominic DiNucci, right? So you became friends with him, and that kind of led to you promoting your first wrestling show, correct? And you've went on record to say that this is the worst wrestling card you've ever seen, ever. So tell us about that and why you say that.
Okay. Well, first of all, Carmella had the relationship with Dominic and with Bruno. They did the grand opening, and right around then, Dominic says to us, and he had a heavy Italian accent, which I can't do. Have you ever thought about promoting a wrestling show? Well, it was the furthest thing from my mind. Carmella never thought of it. I never thought of it. So we said to Dominic, what's it take? I do everything. Well, anyway, we had a show. It was in the Chamonix High School, a local high school. We got about 125 people to come to the event. The main event was Dominic DiNucci against the Mighty Igor. Now, Mighty Igor was 20 years past his prime. Dominic DiNucci was 20 years past his prime. And he was a main event that drew not one single ticket. Okay? 125 people because we begged people to come. Now, as it turned out, some of Dominic DiNucci's students were on the card. And one of them turned out to be Shane Douglas.
Uh-huh. Okay,
so Shane was, every time I see Shane now, we talk about the first time he was on the show. That card ended with Dominic DiNucci and Mighty Igor and got worse before that. I mean, it was all rookies. It was all starters. Nobody kind of knew how to work the crowd. There was a lot of green talent. There were guys that had never worked together before. So they were two green guys in a red. It was horrible. But we had 125 people. They enjoyed it. We thanked them for coming. And I knew that Dominic DiNucci and Mighty Igor would never be a main event for me again.
Well, you continue to sponsor some events with wrestlers and things through your store and do some things. And eventually, though, did you not help? You kind of helped promoted the NWA shows in the area, right? Doing some promotional stuff for them.
Yeah, we did some more independent shows. But one of our main events was Bruiser Brody against Abdul the Butcher. How's that one for you?
Yeah.
Okay. It was unbelievable. But anyway, we had gotten tight with the NWA. And again, that's a story unto itself. Carmel and I both went down to Crockett's office in the Carolinas. But in my making relationship with this Elliot Murnick, one time Elliot calls me up at my office. He had my business card. Calls me up at the office and he says, look, I know you've kind of did a show or two in the past. I'm looking for some eyes and ears in the Philadelphia area. All right. Well, as it turns out, he was based in the Carolinas. Mm-hmm. Elliot never drove or flew up to the Philadelphia shows. He took his boat up. So it took him a day and a half to take his boat up. And it was a pain in the ass for him. So he asked me if I could be his eyes and ears. Well, one thing led to the other, and he calls me up again one day, and he says, Joel, I have an opportunity that we can't pass up. So what's the opportunity? The Crocketts need to do a show on a Wednesday or a Thursday night. I still can't remember which night it was. And we route these guys. They got them Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but we got an opening on a Thursday or a Wednesday. I'd like to put the show up in the Philadelphia area. So I said, okay, that sounds like an idea. Well, where do you want me to put the show? He says, that's for you to figure it out. So one thing leads to the other, and I happen to have a contact at the Sheraton Valley Forge in the Philadelphia area, and they had never hosted a wrestling show. The building was not built for a wrestling show. Well, anyway, I picked it up. I said, let's do it. I get the contract. I sign it in lieu of Elliot Murnick. We get the show together. And we start promoting it. Jim Cornette gets involved. And Jim Cornette wanted to cut a promo for our TV up here in Philadelphia. Now, you have to be from the Philadelphia area to realize this. The name of the town was King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. So Jim Cornette comes on, does his thing. And he says, let me ask you a question. Who is this King of Prussia? Okay. And everybody in the Philadelphia area cracked up. Anyway, it was a school night. We wound up having, at best my recollection, 1,200. Now, yeah. I could probably look this up somewhere. Yeah. But anyway, we had 1,200 people. At 5 o'clock, I get a phone call. Now, keep in mind, there were no cell phones back then. Right. I get a phone call. I get paged. I got to go get the phone. It's the people calling me from the Carolinas. They're fogged in. Oh, I got 1,200 people here. Anyway, long story short, they finally got the clearance to get out. Okay? You get clearance to get out. And the next thing I know is I'm arranging to get a police escort to get the guys from the airport to King of Prussia, which is about a 35 or 40 minute ride. I get a phone call from the airport after the plane lands from J.J. Dillon. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm getting some guys together. We're heading our way up. Get ready. Well, again, he didn't keep in touch to let me know he was close. Well, picture this carload. It was J.J. Dillon, Jimmy Valiant, and Tully Blanchard. So they come to the building. They come to the building, and they tell me they got dressed in the car. Okay? They get to the building, and he gives me a signal. And we did the ring announcing, and we have the opening match was Jimmy Van against Tully Blanchard. That wasn't a feud that meant anything to anybody, but it got the crowd going, and their job was to wrestle until the rest of the wrestlers got there. Well, sure enough, the rest of the wrestlers got there. They got in the back. Our main event that night was Rock and Roll Express against the Midnight Express. Flair was not on the card. And we had a show. It didn't start till late. Half the crowd left by 9 o'clock, 9:30. It was a school night. Okay. But it was our way of getting in the door. Okay. And one thing led to the other. And that's how we got involved with Crockett. And that's how we got involved with promoting an NWA show. We then did another one in St. Mary, Pennsylvania, which is 6.5 hours from Philadelphia. Okay. Carmella and I scoped that out one time. We rented a limousine because we weren't going to drive it. We took the limo out there, got on a radio show out there, got the limo back. We wound up selling out that building. Now, in St. Mary, Pennsylvania, the guys had to fly into Pittsburgh, and it was about an hour, hour and a half north. Okay? So, again, we became kind of like Pennsylvania. Anytime they needed a show in Pennsylvania, they were calling us up. That's how we got involved with the NWA.
Well, and then, I mean, you winded up kind of buying out your partners and things. Eventually, you started Tri-State Wrestling Alliance. So what led to that transition to thinking, okay, I want to do this, attempt to do this a little more often, a little more full-time, and really make a run at it?
You jumped ahead of the ballgame, but basically what happened, we wound up being on the radio, and we had a show called Wrestling Radio.
Right.
And again, that's another hour unto itself, okay?
Yeah.
But by getting on the radio, we started to have a following, all right? And one thing led to the other. Carmella decided that it was getting too costly. She wanted to be a full-time mom. Good move on her part. Me, like an idiot, decided I'm going to keep pursuing it. I can be a full-time father, but I'm not the full-time mother. Well, one thing I figured, let me go run my own show. It wasn't the TWA at the time. Mm-hmm. And I ran a show, an independent show at Temple University. Well, and again, it's a whole story into itself, but I got the itch to start running some shows on a regular basis. And I always believed in the truth in advertising. I don't want to be the National Wrestling Alliance and then wrestle in 7 cities. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I wanted to run in the tri-state area, which is, in this case, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. I did one show in Maryland at one point, but basically it was New Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania. I started the TWA, and in fact, I brought this up in a previous podcast. Bill Apter and George Napolitano from the magazines both live in the Philadelphia area. So they would come to my shows, God bless them. And when I decided to start an organization called the Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, I had some belts made up, and I'm talking legitimate belts, not the crap that you buy two for $35. The belt back then was $400 and some odd, and that was back in the late 80s, which at that time was real money.
Yeah.
I announced the belt, the creation of the TWA from the ring, and Bill Apter literally walks up to the ring. I have this on video. If you YouTube it, you can see it. He comes up to me and says, I want you to know PWI is going to recognize your belt. Oh, my God. So now the national magazine is approving my belt. And the one thing I had done with George and with Bill Apter was, as I did all my shows, they could come to all my shows and take pictures. But on the pictures, I want you to give me credibility. I want you to say, courtesy of Tri-State Wrestling Alliance. I didn't need my name in there. Nobody knew who the hell I was. Well, these guys, the talent that I was bringing in, I saved them a fortune because they didn't have to go to Memphis to see Memphis. They didn't have to go to World Class to see Texas. They just came to Philadelphia, and I brought them in, okay? And the talent that I brought in was some pretty decent talent.
Yeah.
So that's how that just started to snowball.
Well, and you seem to have kind of a vision in mind for what you wanted, right? Because I've heard that you always said that you weren't interested in TV. You didn't want TV. You didn't want kids at the show. You wanted, you know, that violent, wild, kind of a throwback, right? That, you know, to wrestling. Yeah. So you kind of had an ideal of what you were going for, right?
I knew what I wanted. Now, I didn't know how to get it. Okay. Here, I stole everything. Okay. I had been to Memphis. I loved Memphis style wrestling. I used to love to watch Kevin Sullivan in Florida. I used to watch Austin Idol all the time. I used to watch World Class. I used to watch Pacific Northwest. And here's what I recognized. Everybody had better stuff than the WWF. Okay. I hated the WWF. I still hate it. Think about this one. We just had WrestleMania in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I did not attend one event. Did not watch 1 second. Did not watch anything. Okay. I don't like the duck. I just don't like it. Well, anyway, long story short, I decided, let me bring Memphis to Philly. Okay. We were tight with Jerry Lawler. We were tight with Austin Idol. I was close with Paulie Dangerously. Okay. I was tight with Stan Lane. I was tight with Jim Cornette. So wait, I have the NWA. I've got Memphis. Then I brought up Curry Von Erich and Kevin Von Erich from World Class. I had Kevin Sullivan, who was NWA in Florida. I mean, I had it all. I stole everything. I just brought it into Philly. And what happened was it evolved. I got it to go as far as I could take it. Yeah. Then the ECW came along with Todd Gordon. They took it much higher. I mean, they just took what I started and just went crazy. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one thing that I've learned with all the stuff that I've done is you can't make money in wrestling unless you're Vince McMahon. Okay. Ted Turner lost money with billions.
Yep.
Okay. So what the hell was I going to do? Okay. Ty Gordon lost, I don't even know how much money he lost. Okay. Well, we keep trying to reinvent the wheel. I didn't use TV because my thought was what I was going to put on TV didn't want to go on there. Now, Todd proved me wrong. Okay. But I recognized my radio show was my television. Right. And one number that sticks in my craw, they do something called a Q factor that tells you how many listeners you have. And how they figure that out, I'll never understand. They told me I had a Q rating of 29,000 listeners. Now, if every person listening to my show came to my show, I'd be Vince McMahon. Okay? My biggest show was 3,000 people. Now, that's huge for an independent card. But I had 29,000 listeners.
Yep. Even at that time, were you aware of the market, right? Philly is a unique town, unique fans. Yeah. In all sports, right? Did you have any of that vibe that, hey, they like their blood. They like a little wild. Oh, yeah.
Well, this goes back to the Philadelphia Flyers.
Sure.
When they came to town, they were the Broad Street Bullies.
Right.
Okay. The one thing Philly always did is they always cheered the bad guy.
Right. Yep.
Now, when I was growing up, my favorite wrestler was Spiro Azarian. And he was a heel. It wasn't Bruno Sammartino. It was Spiro's. So Philadelphia has always been known as a bad guy town. Okay. When the NWA came to Philly, if you think back to the heyday of both the WWF and the NWA, the WWF had Hulk Hogan at the top. And the NWA had Ric Flair at the top. Flair, those were the bad guys. The good guys were, so the good guys always got the kids. Now, from a marketing standpoint, if you want to take a kid, you need an adult to be with the kid. You sell twice as many tickets. I didn't want the kids. I wanted the adults. Okay. Now that kept the kids home. Duh, stupid. Okay. But the ones that brought the kids, they wanted to see real wrestling. Now, the one thing I will tell you, I used to have a standard line that if you came to one of my shows, everybody at my show has a front row seat at some point during the show. Okay. Well, if you ever watch my videos,
yep.
Everybody has a front row seat at some point. We have pins count anywhere in the building match. I had one match that was written up in PWI. We had a 6-man tag. The names aren't important, but one of the pins was against the wall. Remember, pins count anywhere. It doesn't have to be the floor.
Yep.
We had a pin against the wall. 1, 2, 3, and it was written up in a story in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Okay, that was my idea. All right. Yeah. So we did things. We took the best of what was out there. If I had a match with Jerry Lawler against Terry Funk, that's the best of the NWA world champ and an AWA world champ. When I had Austin Idol against Buddy Landell, that's a Florida match. Mm-hmm. Okay. I could go over this stuff all day long. When I say it's from down south, it could be Crockett. I mean, right. All Crockett's guys worked for me at some point.
Yeah.
Okay. And whether it was a luncheon, we did luncheons with the wrestlers, whether it was in matches, whatever the case was, I was so connected in the industry. There's a story that was written up in the Philadelphia Daily News, a mainstream newspaper. Picture this scenario. I get a phone call from Ric Flair, and keep in mind, Rick and I were close. I get a call from Ric Flair that he wants me to put him in touch with Bruno Sammartino. And can I give him his phone number? And I said, I don't give out phone numbers to anybody. Okay, what do you need them for? He says, well, we're going to be doing a show in Philly called Halloween Havoc. And we need to reach Bruno because we like Bruno to be the referee. So I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Hold on a second. I'll call Bruno at home. If Bruno gives you his phone number, that's fine. But I ain't giving it to you. So I put Ric Flair on hold of all people. I call Bruno Sammartino. I get him on the phone. I tell him I got Rick on the other line. The three of us. Now I'm sitting back in my office. Bruno's on one line. Rick's on the other. Rick was the booker at the time. He put the deal together. And Halloween Havoc, where we had Bruno Sammartino at the referee in the main event, was my doing.
Well, there you go.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and you mentioned Todd Gordon. So how did you guys meet? And I believe...
Todd found me. Todd originally, when I was on the radio, contacted me about becoming an advertiser on the radio show.
Right.
Now, as the story goes, he listened to me all the time. So I charged him a whopping $75 for a commercial. I think we were six weeks worth, so it's $500, whatever, $450. And Todd comes on, we have the commercials run. Well, then Todd wanted to come to one of my shows. Well, he's an advertiser. I'm not going to charge him for a ticket. So I had him sit at the ring announcer's table, the timekeeper's table. And one time he says to me, and I'm not sure what the order was, but Todd was very involved with the Variety Club, a children's charity.
Right. Yeah.
And when I was doing my shows at Temple University, I ran into a brick wall in that I started one shows. Now I had to go get some insurance. Okay. Well, insurance was expensive. Well, I happened to mention it to Todd, and Todd had an idea. He says, why don't you do the charity, you do the matches for the benefit of the Variety Club, and since it's Variety Club, we'll cover the insurance. Well, if I was going to spend $5,000 on insurance, I'd rather give it to the kids. That's exactly what I did. So now I started running shows. He became the timekeeper. He was always at the ring announcers. And you should see some of the shows that we did when the wrestlers were out of the ring. He's scurrying. He's running like he's running like crazy. But we became good friends. And then one time, I approached Todd because this was toward the end where it was clear that I was running out of money. I said to him, I want to sell you part of my company. Okay? And he didn't want to buy it. He wanted to lend me the money. In fact, he made me sign a lend. He was buying it. Call it whatever you want. So now he was part of us. And then when I came out of when I left the business, it was January 18th of 1992. The guys all start calling around to find out what the hell's going on. And Todd was smart enough to pick up the ball where I left it off. Okay. Yeah. And I, you know, I've only seen Todd twice in 30 years. And to be honest, God bless him. He did. He got the TV that I never got. Okay. He took it national that I was never going to do. He got to Eddie Gilbert through me. He got to Paulie Dangerously through me. Okay. If not me, he doesn't exist. And I know he thinks Todd is God. Okay. Well, if he's God, then what am I? Okay. Because he's without me, he's not. Now, he took it way, far. I give him all the credit in the world. He did a lot more with it than I did. But he would have been there. He would have been there without me. And in fact, right. The attitude era starts because of me.
Right. Absolutely. And that's my next question was going to be, right, because of you and the TWA, and then what Todd added on to you leading into ECW, though, even when in the history books, though, neither one of you get talked about that much, though, right? It's always everybody talks Paul Heyman, and what he did. But come on, does that ever bother you that, you know, I talked to Todd, interviewed Todd, and he's like, whatever. It's at this point, I don't care. But yeah, it did. At no, one time, it did bother him.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's never bothered me per se. Now, I saw Paul, I'm going to say it's about 10 years ago in Dallas, Texas. I happened to be in Dallas at a conference, and he was down there for Raw, and we spent about an hour together. And he gives me, now, he'll never do it publicly. Okay, God forbid Paul ever credits anybody publicly, okay? I mean, if you think about it, the Sandman, which was really the main event for ECW, started in my wrestling school, okay? And Stone Cold Steve Austin is Sandman, okay? Yep. So, wait a minute. If Sandman started in my school, then Stone Cold Steve Austin ought to call me and thank me, okay? Now, it's funny because I spoke to Steve one time when he was working. He was training in Texas. I had Chris Adams coming up for a card. And one day I get a phone call, and it was a guy, I didn't know who it was. It was, as it turned out, him. He said to me, I want to come up and wrestle for you because you have the national press. I said, well, it's going to cost me $600 to fly you from Texas. And he says, well, I'll work for nothing. I said, well, that's not the point. It's still going to cost me $600 at a hotel room. So I never brought him up. I had a chance to bring him up and start him. And I said, no. Okay. So, I mean, it just, you need some lucky breaks along the way.
Sure.
All right. And I think that I know in my mind that Todd's nobody without me. Again, he gets all the credit in the world for taking it where it took it, but it wouldn't have started without me. Right. And, you know, there's a move afoot in Philadelphia now. In fact, one of the guys that you know, Bay Ragney.
Yep. Yep. Chubby Dudley.
Bay was doing, yeah. Yep. Bay started a promotion at the 2300 Arena. Yep. They have all these banners. Mm-hmm. So he's now got a writing in campaign to have a new banner put up with five names on it. DC Drake, Larry Winters, Johnny Hotbody, Tony Stetson, and Joel Goodhart. Because the five of us started it all.
Yeah. Without all that group, there's no ECW.
Nope. And I'll tell you what, I'll tell you what, there's no ECW at me. With DC Drake, Larry Winters, Johnny Hotbody, it's very possible there could have been ECW. Those guys were around before me. I didn't find those guys. I just knew what to do with them. Okay. It's clear somebody like Sandman, Glenn Osborne, Jimmy Jannetty, those guys started with me. Yeah. DC Drake, Larry Winters, Johnny Hotbody, Tony Stetson, they had started way before me. In fact, a couple of them were out of the Monster Factory with Larry mm-hmm. Sharp. Mm-hmm. I just knew what to do with them. Okay, and I had the money. As it turned out, they called me the wallet. I was the wallet. Okay, and in hindsight, I lost $168,000. Now, that's back, got out in 92. So multiply that by inflation, it's $1 billion. Yeah. I lost a lot of money, but I had a ball. I would do it all over again, as crazy as that sounds. And I'm planning to do one more show.
No,
I don't
we'll
know.
We'll talk about that here in a little bit. Okay, let's talk about that. Okay. But talking about that core group you talked about, though, when you stopped TWA and they spoke about doing ECW, Todd Gordon wasn't the one that initiated that, right? I spoke to Todd. It was DC Drake and what was it, Stetson, I think? No, Winters. That went to him. And, that we Larry wanted to continue Winters. This on.
Yeah, Larry Winters was my booker. Okay. Yeah. And Larry has since passed away. And I love him to death. God bless him. He was the booker, and all Larry wanted was paydays. I mean, Larry, you had to know Larry to appreciate. He didn't want to be involved in management, was paydays. When he was my booker, it's because I paid him extra to be my booker. When we opened up the wrestling school, it was Larry, Ron Shaw, and myself, and we were third. Okay? So we each made some money. Larry wanted to keep it going. Well, Todd is the one who had a true wallet. Okay, Todd's business was his family business for years. He was financially very secure. And he was the one that had, somebody had to pay the bill. Yep. And they went to Todd. Now, I don't get enough. I don't know if Todd brought it up or if they brought it up. But they met at Todd's store and decided to create Eastern Championship Wrestling.
Yeah.
Okay, and he thought, I'll just run a show every once in a while, keep his hands in the mix. Well, God knows, once you get the bug, you're done.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that, the end of TWA there, right? Because there was the infamous match you tried to put on, right? The Battle of the Nature Boys, right? Buddy Rogers and Buddy Landell. That never happened. That never happened, right? So what all happened there? Was it just financially, the tickets weren't where you were, or what was going on there?
All right, it was a combination of things. This show was going to be the biggest show I ever saw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the gate itself, I was going to have to do 35,000 at the door just to break even. Okay, mm-hmm. And what was clear is I wasn't going to happen. And everybody in my world got Flair fever, including me. Okay. I had conversations with Rick. This was when he was between the NWA and the WWE. He wasn't sure what he was going to do. He was going to come wrestle. Well, two shows before that, Buddy Rogers and I got together in the actual wrestling ring. Okay. He actually was a referee for one of my matches. Buddy Rogers had a relationship with Carmella way before me. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I knew Buddy. Buddy was moving to Florida, and I wanted to get Buddy involved, and I kept picking because I was working with Buddy Landell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not an idiot. I'm thinking, wait a second. This is something. So my original idea was that Buddy Landell against Buddy Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
That was the original idea.
Right.
Then I got Flairitis. Now, what am I going to do? So I figured out if I can get Flair, I'll sell my building out. Okay, to the point where if I didn't get Flair, I wasn't going to sell the building yet. I was going to have a match. My original game plan was Flair against Buddy Landell, because that would have been a decent match. Buddy right. was wrestling at the time. Flair was wrestling. And my original goal, Buddy, God bless Buddy, another one I wish was still alive. Buddy comes to me. He says, I got the finish. Now, I never even went to them with what I thought the finish would be, because to be honest with you, I didn't know what the finish would be. He says to me, here's the deal. We'll do our thing. Tell us how much time you need. He's going to pin me clean in the ring. Now, I could have never gone to Buddy Landell and said, lay down for Ric Flair. I couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
He came up with the idea. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then I said to him, I got a better idea. Why don't you pin Flair? I'm never going to get Flair a second time. Okay, if you're my champ, I'll have you for more and more. I said, I can't approach Rick with that one. I don't care if it's a mess up finish. You got to bring, and he was willing to do that. The next thing I know, Flair signs, and he can't come to my show. Okay?
Yeah.
So now I've got Buddy Landell and Buddy Rogers. All right. Buddy Rogers is a referee. We did a show in New Jersey, and the event was Bam Bam Bigelow against Dr. Death Steve Williams. Okay? Mm-hmm. And Buddy Rogers was the guest referee for no reason. Okay? There's no storyline there other than it was in New Jersey. Well, sure enough, that match that happens. There's a finish. And then what happens? Buddy Landell comes out challenging the pin. Okay? And he's arguing. And again, no reason other than it's Buddy Landell versus Buddy Rogers. Well, that gave me the storyline for the match, okay, that we would have. Unfortunately, that show, now keep in mind, I usually had 3,000 people to a show.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I only had about $1,000. I'm sorry, $1,000 worth of tickets sold over and above my reserve seats. So I was going to lose what I didn't have to lose. Right. It's one thing to lose money on a show and have the money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I had a decision to make. And the decision wasn't an easy one. Yeah. But once I made the decision, I went on the air January 18th of 1992. I went on the air and said, we wrestled, we brawled, we did it all. TWA is closing. Nobody knew. Larry Winters didn't know. Todd Gordon says he knew. I don't think I told him. Now, it's very possible I did. I don't remember. I do not recall telling you. None of the guys knew. None of my boys knew. And I shut off my phone on that Friday. Went on the air on Saturday, and I disappeared to the point where I did not look at wrestling, talk about wrestling, talk to the wrestlers until October of 2009. 17 years of disappearing. I didn't watch a single ECW show. I had everybody's phone number. I shredded my book. Okay, until I get a phone call in October of 2009 from a guy by the name of Mike Tartaglia, wrestles under the name of Michael Bruno. And he used to be, he was one of the wrestlers that we came from my school. So he called me up at my office and he says to me, listen, it's been 17 years. I'd like to start up a promotion again. Do you mind if I use the TWA letters? I said, what am I going to do? I haven't used it in 17 years. Go have it. Little did I know that he wanted to use it to bury it.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he did. I still talk to Mike to this day, but he put the ECWA, the group that he bought, up against the TWA, and TWA lost. And TWA got buried because he just wanted to bury it. All right. But I mean, that's the story. And it's weird. I went 17 years after living, breathing, and dying this stuff for 7 years. I went 17 years without talking to anybody, watching it, listening to it, didn't pick up a magazine, nothing.
So, well, I mean, in recent times, though, you have reemerged some, right? You've done a little bit of managing. You made some appearances. You had a podcast for a while. What led to you kind of easing back into it a little bit here and there?
Once you have it, you always have it, okay? What happened was I went to some of the matches that Mike put together. I got in the ring because he wanted me to not ring announce, but do something. So I got in the ring with Sonny. We did some kind of promotion and what have you. Then, again, it faded. And then I came up with the idea Luna Vachon died.
Yeah.
And Luna worked for me, and I loved Luna. She was great. And it was my way of doing it, childish as it seems, but I became Joel Blackheart. Okay. And the reason for that was on my TWA cards, Luna managed the Blackhearts.
Blackhearts. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's a long story into itself. But yep. I became Joel Blackheart is my way of saying, Luna, I loved you. I did some matches. The problem is now I'll be 71 in August. So I was in my 60s at that point. I wasn't going to take any bumps. I sucked as a manager, but I managed the guy. I'll never forget this. I managed the guy who wrestles out of Maryland. Okay. And he wrestles in the name of Napalm Bomb. All right. He's a big guy. And someday I dreamt that I could look like him. Okay. I decided I was going to manage him, and we had set up where I was going to be on the ring curtain, and he was just going to come into the corner. Well, he came into the corner and he knocked me off the ring rope onto the floor. And I was 61 at the time, so this is 10 years ago. I knew enough to know how to land. But when I did it, he knocked my glasses off.
Oh,
all right? Yeah. I can't see shit without my glasses. Okay?
Me too.
Fortunately, somebody ringside caught the glasses. I fall to the floor. The two refs come out to drag me back because I'm dead. They bring me back my glasses. Now, this show was in Delaware, 50 miles from my house. If I didn't get those glasses back, I have no clue how I would have made it home.
Yeah.
Well, that's the last time I took a bump. After that, I did some other shows. I did my thing. I mean, you can, but you know, it was, I have the gift of gab, but on these independent cards, the gift of gab really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So, I mean, I did what I did. So I was black card. It's funny. I have three companies. So my financial services company, I have a partner in that, but my name there is Joel Goodhart. Then with the wrestling, I became Blackheart. And then I have concerts on the side under the company name is Friendly Heart. So I tell everybody I'm tripolar, I'm Goodhart, Blackheart, and Friendly Heart.
Yeah, well, that works. So tell us about this show. You say what you got a show that you're going to run, right? What is the news with that?
Okay, so Bay Ragney is a total pain in the ass. Okay? I love Bay to death. He got taught in my wrestling school, and he never got onto a wrestling show until I closed. Okay. Bay calls me up one time and he says, "Do you mind doing a podcast? I'm starting up the podcast with all the TWA people. People are still asking for it."
Yeah.
So I did a podcast that lasted like 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. He's had others on for 4 or 5 hours. All right. But anyway, he says to me, I'm starting a promotion. You know, if you go to the 2300 arena, there's banners. And mm-hmm. Todd Gordon has a banner, and Paulie Dangerously has a banner. Well, those banners don't exist without five people. DC Drake, Larry Winters, Tony Stetson, Johnny Hotbody, and you. Mm-hmm. So he started a write-in campaign. He's gotten 300 people to sign so far, international. I can't believe some of the signatures and where they're coming from. We're going to be approaching the 2300 arena at some point in the future to see if we can get a banner put up. Now, that's the start of the conversation. I said to Bay, "You know what? You know, we should do one more TWA show." And son of a bitch, if he doesn't run, go crazy with it. Now, again, back this up a little bit. Late last year, early this year, whenever it was, I noticed on Facebook that DC Drake was getting entered into the New England Wrestling Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And there was going to be a party in Rhode Island to introduce all these people. And I decided on my own, I'm going up to see him. He did enough for me. I rent a driver because I don't drive. There's a long story on that. I got a driver. Took me 6 hours to go up there. Got up there when his party was starting. I'm in a wheelchair, so I get rolled into the party. He introduced me to some of the people. He's the first one who's entered into the Hall of Fame, and he acknowledges me from the stage. And again, it's on YouTube. You can see it.
Yeah.
And then after that, I didn't stick for the whole party, but I then had to ride home. So I drove 12 hours. I rode 12 hours total, but I went up to see him. And I said to myself, you know what? God bless him. He's had some health issues. He's never going to get in the ring again. I'm never going to get in the ring again. The week before that, I had spoken to Johnny Hotbody.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny, I hadn't talked to in 30 years. Okay? I found him. We talked for hours. Well, you know what happens when you get the conversation going. And all of a sudden, I'm saying to myself, wait a second. Johnny Hotbody, DC Drake. Bay Ragney's talking to Glenn Osborne and Jimmy Jannetty. Holy shit. So I said, you know what? Here's what I want to do. I want to do one more show. I'm going to be calling it One and Done. I'm not looking to start the TWA up again. I don't want all the independents around here to think that I'm coming in with something that's going to compete against them. I want to do a show called One and Done. I want to do a show One and Done where I'm going to take, as it turns out, I'm going to get 6 matches from 6 different local promoters. Okay, I want the best of their best. And the top main event is going to be two guys that I think are phenomenal. Breaker Morant and Chris Wilde. If I was starting a promotion today, they're my DC Drake and Larry Winters. When I was doing the black card gimmick and all that kind of stuff, I watched those guys work. They're my main event. And I've already called. Now, I haven't spoken to Chris yet. I spoke to Breaker, and he said he's okay with it. Those guys are phenomenal, okay? I'm going to have those two guys. I'm going to have 5 or 6 other matches from the other local promoters. I'm going to have old-time TWA guys in the corners. I'm going to have Johnny Hotbody and Tony Stetson in a corner. I'm going to have DC Drake and one of Larry Winter's kids, because Larry's since passed away, in a corner. I'm going to have like one of, not these, Robert Feinstein down here does these icons of wrestling with all the autographs. I'm going to have all the TWA guys available for pictures and autographs. Any hardcores that have been around for a long time, if you want your picture taken with DC Drake, you'll get it. If you want it with Johnny Hotbody, you'll get it. If you want it with the name guy, yeah, again. Okay? We're not going to have any names on the card. And my goal is to get 1,000 people. My goal is to get it into the 2,300 arena, although we don't have a contract yet. And I want the damn banner raised that night. That's my key. Now, if the banner doesn't have my name on it, I don't care. I know Bay put my name on it. I don't care if it's just the four guys.
Yeah.
All right. We need to get recognized, because without us, there's no Attitude Era. There's no Attitude. There's no Ty Gordon. There's no Sandman. None. Now, Saturday night, I'm going to be seeing Abdul the Butcher. Okay. Mm-hmm. Abby's obviously doing his final leg doing. He's getting inducted into the GCW Hall of Fame, whatever that stands for. Yeah. And he's going to be down Atlantic City. So I'm going to go down there. I know he remembers me, because last time I saw him, he gave me a fork. Okay. But I mean, one of my first matches was with him. One of my last matches was with him. He wrote the whole history of me starting out against Bruiser Brody all the way through the, he was on every TWA main card that I could get him on.
Yeah.
So we're going to do this show sometime in the spring. Now, where are you based out of?
I right now I live in North Carolina.
Okay. Well, it's an 8-hour ride for you to come up here.
Yep. Yep.
So you're invited to come to the show.
Well, I appreciate it. I'd absolutely love that. That'd be great. And keep me posted as things. Go ahead. What's that?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, keep me posted as things develop. And when you have stuff to share, and I'll make sure I share it on all my stuff and mention it and support it. Because
you'll be aware of it. You'll be aware of it. In fact, I don't know how many followers you have on this thing, but if you get a bunch of people together, we'll have a whole section for you.
There you go. Sounds good.
That's a good thing when you're a promoter, you can do shit like that.
That's right. That's right. Well, let's wrap this up, Joel, because I tried to keep it about an hour, but man, we're going to have you back again. Maybe as it gets, closer to this thing becoming a reality and as things develop, because like you said, we just mentioned the radio show. We just mentioned certain things. There's so much more to talk about. But I like to keep it about an hour and bring guys back and do multi appearances, keep it a little digestible. But
you found me for this. So you know where to find me now.
I do. Absolutely. Yeah. And like I said, you've long been a guy I've wanted to have on because of, I agree with Bay, man. Your importance in the business is underappreciated. And you should already have a banner in the arena. It shouldn't be a fight for it. It should already be there. And with those other guys.
The banner should be for the fans, because without the fans, none of this shit happens.
Well, I can tell you this. As a magazine, I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Indiana. That's where I was born and raised. And as a reading a magazine reader and everything else, and I didn't have East Coast TV, obviously, I knew who Joel Goodhart, the TWA, was long before I knew who anybody in ECW was. you guys were all over the magazines, and I was like, man, this is something, man. I'd love to be able to go to Philly and watch one of these shows. And
what kept you?
I was just too young. I didn't have the funds to go on a sudden road trip.
Fair enough. Well, it's funny. I was in Indianapolis one time. I went to Indianapolis Speedway. I just went to Elmo's Steakhouse, and I went to Schwartz's Deli. Okay, and that's all I remember. That's all I know about Indiana. There you go.
That's the prime of it. Only other place I would add is there's a blues bar called the Slippery Noodle Inn. It's been there like 100 years, and it's pretty remarkable. It's remarkable.
I'll tell you what, you and I have to go there one time. How's that?
Definitely. It's one of my favorite places in the country. Love it.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. But I will keep in touch. Like I said, you keep in touch and as this thing progresses, and we'll have you back on in the future. And I'll share anything and everything as this thing progresses. Sounds exciting. And I'll do everything within my power to be there in Philly in attendance.
I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you in person. And anytime you need me, just give me a call.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
All right, welcome back. I am Dave Dynasty. Thank you to Joel Goodhart for joining me for the interview. So much fun. And like I say every time, I hope in the future to have Joel back. All these guys, right? I talk to them. I try to keep it around an hour, give or take, 45 minutes to an hour on these interviews. But I could talk for hours with these guys. So that always leaves the door open to me to bring them back in the future for future installments, right? Future chats. And that's what I like to do. That's how I like to keep it. Make sure you go follow me on X. I'm at the Dave Dynasty. Go check out all of the WrestleCopia network of podcasts. All the shows are fun listens that shine a light on wrestling history with some really great hosts. So go check them out at WrestleCopia.com or search for that podcast by name on your favorite podcast platform. While you're out there perusing the internet, make sure you go check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. You can visit classicwrestling.net or download their app on all of your devices. All right, now next episode. Here we go. Here's the big announcement, right? Everybody wants to know. I feel like everybody hangs around and wants to know, who's next? Who's next? Who's next? Anyway, next episode, I will have former WWE superstar Duke the Dumpster Drosy on the podcast. Guys, I know a lot of people hate on some of that 90s WWE, right? And I'm not here to say yay or nay or whatever else, but this was a fascinating conversation with Duke Drosy. And there's a lot more to this conversation than what you would anticipate. We discussed the PWI 500, Triple H, his scrapped heel turn, his battles with addiction, and much, much more. It's a very fun, very unique interview. Again, Duke, he holds nothing back, right, man? He just opens up. And really, he says a lot of powerful, inspiring things. And it's a fun interview that you're going to want to hear. That's on next week's episode. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss that and all the other great episodes I have coming up in the future. Lots more great interviews, including some rare and first-time podcast guests, plus more of my AWA deep dive episodes and much, much more. So be sure you subscribe, like I said, and never miss an episode. Guys, thank you for listening. Thank you for your feedback on social media and following me. Thank you for your support. And guys, as always, until next week, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Menneker thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.